Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
Episode 9 of Growing the Game is a beauty, in my opinion. We've got Matt Wilson, quarterback of the Holy Cross Crusaders, stopping by to talk about his 7-0 team and their first playoff matchup with St. Joe's. We'll hear from Mason Nias, former Riffle Royal quarterback here in Regina, who's now a backup quarterback with the U of S Huskies. He saw his first game action last week and was dynamite in that ball game, throwing for over 200 yards and 2 touchdowns. We'll talk to him about that encounter and about the one coming up this week against Manitoba, a game they have to win to make the playoffs. Also want to give a shout out to the U of R Rams, who are on the road against UBC this week. That's a preview of a first round playoff matchup. And the Saskatoon Hilltops, in quest of their 4th straight national championship, will host the CJFL semifinal against Vancouver Island this weekend. So good luck to Tom Sargent and his gang. Have you heard the name Hunter Canick-Liepert? Well, Hunter Canick-Liepert is a guy that was involved in the libel lateral. If you don't know, you got to stay tuned for that story. Also, we're going to talk to Chris Best about Darian Durant's return to Saskatchewan. Nick Lewis, maybe it's his final game. And we'll get some thoughts on Daron Carter playing defensive back for the Rough Riders from Chris Best, the former Rough Rider offensive lineman, and our panelists on the 620 CKRM Rough Rider Radio Network. Also, Derek Pilon of the Riffle Royals will stop by to preview their matchup against the Campbell Tartans in the playoffs. And on the other side, Mike Anderson, the former Saskatchewan Rough Rider center who is in the Plaza of Honor, and a guy that he was born in Saskatoon, played his pro football in Saskatchewan, and right now sells pharmaceuticals in San Diego. Want to give a shout out to our sponsor, the first sponsor to believe in growing the game. That is Mako Collision Repair in Regina. Alan and Joe, good guys over there. If you've had an uh-oh and want it perfect again, better get Mako.
This is the segment where we talk to some of the greats of the game, some of the greats in Rider history, and this guy falls under that category in both areas. Mike Anderson, longtime center with the Rough Riders, played in 205 career games, and when he stepped away from the game, I think that was 8th most games played in a Rider jersey. That's longevity, my friend.
Yeah, I had the good fortune of staying pretty healthy, and as a matter of fact, I'm very proud and honored that those were consecutive games, so had some dings over the years and had a good long run. I really enjoyed that, certainly those 12 years.
Yeah, think about that, though. You're an offensive lineman, the center of all the action. You're getting hit on every play or hitting somebody in every play. 205 games is quite a remarkable stat.
You know, it really is when you take a look back at it. I know that there's some guys, obviously, you mentioned 8th overall that have had a much longer careers and have played more games, but certainly a physical area, and from the standpoint of injuries, generally the only time frame that we get injuries is through overuse of kind of pounding away at certain areas of our hands and knees and feet, or somebody else kind of falling into you, which unfortunately happens every once in a while. So, yeah, I'm very proud of being able to play that long and that many games in a row.
What was the worst injury Mike Anderson played with?
Well, I closing in on the end of my career a couple of years beforehand, I started to have some problems in my lower back and unfortunately had to have surgery during one off season. But I was able to come back and play after that, and still to this day, my back is still in pretty good shape. So that was one I think that was probably the most traumatic. I didn't ever have one of those injuries that was torn cartilage to the point where, or I should say, ligament to the point where I would be, you know, out for a long period of time. Other than my first training camp, I partially tore my ligament and missed the first 9 games of my Rough Rider career, and after that it was clear sailing.
If we were scouting Mike Anderson today and he was a player and you were on the opposing team, what would you say in the scouting report about Mike Anderson, the center?
He generally tends to lead with his head, which unfortunately, because I was one of the smaller O linemen, I think, in the league. I came in originally in 1984 at what they thought was a good size, at about 265, 75 pounds. And by the time I retired, I was probably around 275, 280, but our offensive line averaged about 305 to 310 pounds. So the game became very large during that time frame, and so I had to throw everything that I had at the defensive lineman to make sure I slowed him down.
Did Mike Anderson suffer many concussions because of that?
I did have some concussions, but not to the point of I think that we see in today's game. It's a little bit faster, and on the line, you know, we're fortunate that our collisions are fairly short distance collisions, I would suggest. You're not having, like a defensive back that will run 20, 30 yards and make contact with one of the other players. We generally don't have those types of situations, but I certainly had, you know, a couple here and there, don't seem to have major issues here at this point in time due to that.
Talk about that O-line, because, you know, it's with any team. That O-line, the group of Hoggies, they're a tight-knit group. They stick together much like the Ryder O-line today. Back in the day, you had Poli, Aldag, and such. Just talk about the tight-knit group that was the offensive line of the Rough Riders.
Well, I look back at that group, and I certainly, you know, had some absolutely fantastic guys to work with and to play with, and guys that were leaders for years, and guys that I watched, you know, for years. You mentioned two of them, Poli and Aldag, and what was amazing to me is that we're all, you know, in a competitive circumstance, and, you know, people are coming in to try and take jobs, but when I did get an opportunity to play and get a chance to start on that old line, they took me in like I was one of the family, and I remember one of the first couple games that got into a little bit of a tough with one of the folks on the other side of the line, and both those guys were right there beside me throwing haymakers, trying to make sure that I was taken care of. So, you know, I've mentioned a lot of times that the character of the team that I played with and had the opportunity to be around for 12 years was really something that really strikes you as a key to remember.
Now, if there ever was a Saskatchewan Rough Rider, a true Rough Rider, it might be Mike Anderson. Born in Regina, raised in Saskatoon. You got North and South covered there.
I do. I moved to Saskatoon when I was a little bit younger, but I also, you know, to add to that, had the good fortune of having my father play for the Rough Riders, mm-hmm. Paul Anderson, from 53 to 58. So I was a second-generation Rough Rider, which even brings, you know, more excitement to what, you know, what was accomplished there. So, I mean, what an honor. I was the final territorial exemption, is my understanding, in 1984. A Saskatchewan boy coming back to have an opportunity to play with the hometown. How much better can it get than that?
Yeah, no kidding, and I was going to mention that. It must have been quite an honor coming over from the San Diego State Aztecs to come back here, and like you said, kind of carry your father's tradition on. That must have had was there a little pressure there because of that, Mike?
You know, there wasn't pressure in the sense that anything that he would have created. My dad was one of those guys that kind of coached from a distance, so to speak. He was there in support all the time, always at the high school games, at Gordie Howe Bowl, always at, you know, things, making sure that he was supportive. But he never really put the pressure on either to play football or certainly to, you know, to compete or anything like that. So I never had that sort of pressure that I think some people, unfortunately, these days have.
Mike, who did you, I don't know if enjoy is the right word, but who did you kind of look forward to lining up against, you know, in your 12-year career, whether it be in practice or the opponents, Eskimos, Calgary? Was there a guy that you either said, oh, man, I got to face him, or you rather enjoyed lining up against?
Well, you know, there's a number of guys both on our team and certainly that we competed against that you'd like to be challenged by. Gerald Bayless comes to mind. Gerald obviously became a Rough Rider for a period of time, so not only did I compete against him, but also had the circumstance where I would practice against him all week. He was a very good player, and I think that's the thing. You want to be challenged in games. Chuck Klingbeil is another one. Both of those guys, really powerful players. And again, I was moderately undersized at the time when I was playing. So those guys created some challenges, but again, you want to always be challenged in that game.
Now, how different was it to be a center for Ken Austin, versus Tom Burgess? Because back in the day, we had the Burgess-Austin debate. A lot of fans weighed in on some players. I've asked Farrell and Elgard whose side they chose. I'm not asking you that, but was it different to be a center for Burgess as opposed to Austin? Different demands, different types of likes or dislikes for them?
Yeah, they managed the games differently, I would say, and probably managed the personnel a little bit differently. Ken Austin was obviously a kind of a meticulous player and both of those guys were leaders on the field, running the show, but they just managed the game a little bit differently from the standpoint of how things took place, just the whole atmosphere out there. Both extremely good competitors, and I'm really thrilled that, we had a chance to not only play together with both of those guys, but to see both of them go on to win Grey Cup championships, which was pretty cool.
Mike Anderson, we enjoyed watching you play those 12 years in Saskatchewan, and thanks for being our guest here, and where are they now?
Thank you very much.
Well, on the Growing the Game podcast now, we're joined by U of S Huskies quarterback Mason Nias from Regina, but playing in Saskatoon. How does that feel to be playing in Saskatoon but being a Regina boy?
Oh, that feels good. We only played the Rams once this year, so that was good, but it's always fun playing the rivals from back home.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so Mason, you've had quite a football career. When did you get started playing football?
I started back in Adam football with the Alouettes, I think around 8 or 9, maybe.
Yeah. And have you always been a quarterback, Mace?
Yeah, I played quarterback all the way through, I believe.
What made you want to be a quarterback? What do you like best about the position of quarterback?
I like just having control of the game, having a lot of control, having the ball in my hands. And I like to think an aspect of football, going through my progressions and reading defenses and stuff like that.
Of course, you played with the Riffle Royals. You were the MVP, the offensive MVP, or the MVP at the Canada Cup. And, of course, you quarterback Team Canada in the International Bowl. And you have all those accolades. And then you come to the U of S Huskies. And, of course, the natural progression is to kind of wait your turn, Mason. So how does it, you've kind of been on the bench here for the better part of 2 years. Has that been frustrating? How have you dealt with that?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. It's tough waiting around for your turn, but, I just compete, push Kyle to be better every day, and, when my numbers call, I'll be ready to go.
What's that relationship like with Kyle Siemens?
Oh, it's good. He's a great guy, really funny. Yeah, he's helped me a lot with football, too, just learning defenses and, getting used to the CIS game, so he's been a great help for me.
What's been the biggest adjustment for you coming from high school football to U Sports?
Probably just the advancements in defenses, a lot of different coverages, and the speed of the game.
Okay, Mason, you got into the ball game last week against the U of A and over 200 yards passing and 2 touchdowns. I watched that game. You were slinging it. What was it like to get into your first action?
It was good to actually get some action in the game other than practice, and I had to ease in there a bit for the first couple drives, but I started to feel comfortable and found a good safety blanket there with Mitch Hillis, our veteran receiver, so it was nice to have a guy like that out there help me.
I was going to say, what's it like to have a veteran guy who's, I think, like 48 yards away from being the all-time leading receiver in Huskies history? What's it like when you're in trouble to look for number 87?
Well, it's really nice having a guy like that. He's going to go up there and make some plays for you, and he did a lot against U of A. I think he had 200 plus yards receiving or something crazy like that. So yeah, it's really nice having a guy like that, leadership and skill wise as well.
I'm going to get to Marcus Crandall in a second, but what turned you on to the quarterback position? Like, was there an athlete you looked up to or somebody you kind of tried to emulate growing up?
I'd like to say Marcus Crandall, I don't know. My brother played quarterback and I obviously wanted to be like my older brother and all that, but my dad always like talk about Joe Montana and him. So, there's a lot of guys.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so let's talk about Marcus Crandall and how much he's helped in your development. It's always nice to have a guy that was a Grey Cup MVP and played in the league and coached in the CFL to kind of guide you. What's he been like?
Oh, he's been awesome. Super nice guy, easy to work with. Taught me and Kyle a ton about the game of football and the position, of course. And he just really helpful learning defenses. It's a lot about reading defenses, going through your progressions, and just technique of the game, too. He's been a huge help.
Now, before I talk about the matchup with Manitoba, and that's a key game for you guys, what's it like being the backup quarterback? They always say you got to prepare like you're going to go in. What kind of change has that been for you in terms of the mental gymnastics and just making sure you're ready to go when your number's called like last week?
It's just about being mentally sharp all the time. Of course, like you said, you prepare like you're starting every week. So you do a lot of film. I watch a lot of film with Kyle every week, and I just practice like you're going to play on Friday or Saturday or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm. Hey, let me ask you, how tough is it to be a quarterback and be a student? I mean, it's one thing to be a receiver or be a running back or a defensive back, and those are key positions too, but to be a quarterback and know the playbook and then also be a student, like how tough is it to be a student athlete?
It's tough for every position, but of course a quarterback has its added things you need to know. So, it's pretty tough, I'm not going to lie to you, but it's all about time management. I don't know, you get used to it, so it's not too bad.
I know you're a long way to go, but how excited are you that guys like Andrew Buckley and Brandon Bridge are kind of making their mark at the quarterback position as Canadians?
Yeah, it is exciting, I'm not going to lie. It's just to have a chance. To play in the CFL would be awesome. But, yeah, they're making some headway moving into the CFL, so that's good for all Canadian quarterbacks there.
Okay, Mason, you have other pressing matters like the Manitoba Bisons. What can you tell us about them? You guys got to win this game to ensure a playoff spot.
Yeah, they're a good team. There's no doubt about it. They've been putting up good fights the last 2 weeks against two very good teams. So, we're just watching film on them. We're going to put all we got into the field on Saturday, and hopefully we can come out with a win and get into the playoffs.
That's Mason Nias from Regina, quarterback with the U of S Huskies. Thanks, Mason.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, time now to talk to one of the up-and-coming quarterbacks in this province, if not this country, Matt Wilson from Holy Cross in Saskatoon. How are you, Matt?
I'm doing really well. And yourself?
Awesome, man. So you're getting ready for the playoffs. As we talk, you've just changed, got off the practice field, getting ready to take on St. Joe's in the first round of the playoffs. How excited are the boys?
Oh, very excited, very excited. With our new field and everything, our new facilities, there's a great energy around the program. And, St. Joe's is a rival of ours, so it'll be a good game for sure.
Talk about your new field and your surroundings, and because that's new to me. What is and maybe people in southern Saskatchewan here, talk about your facility.
We actually had an anonymous donator donate a substantial amount of money, and we got a new grass field right beside our high school, and new uprights. We got netting behind it, as well as a new clubhouse with lockers and everything.
Okay, so you guys are 7-0. Is that record indicative of the season? Like, did you guys have your way with teams this year?
No, I don't think we had a way with anybody at all. Actually, we just came in. We game planned well. We got some great coaches here, and we dealt with a little bit of injuries throughout the year. But we always have that next man up mentality, and we were lucky enough to get out of the season 7-0.
Okay, so before we talk about Matt Wilson and your playing career, let's talk about your team here. Talk about some of the guys that are around you, some of your weapons, some guys you want to highlight with this 7-0 record.
We got a couple great running backs. A young grade 11 guy, Tanner Sakash. He was also on U18 Team Saskatchewan with myself, as well as a grade 10 kid, Terrell Brightley, really good, really elusive. We got linebackers, Carson Schrader also was on U18, safety, Ramsey Dervis, he was on U18, he's a grade 11 kid, so he'll be around next year. Steven Gilowitz, a great target for me as a receiver, he's grade 12, O-lineman, Ryan Gibson, great big guy, 6'5". Throws his body around really well and really good IQ. Everybody can step in at any time and fill in any position.
Matt Wilson joining us here, the quarterback for Holy Cross as they get ready for the playoffs against St. Joe. Okay, so let's talk about your football career. How long have you been playing quarterback for, Matt?
I first played quarterback in my second year at Bantam, so that would have been grade 9 was the first year I was a full-time quarterback. I played a little bit in grade 8 in my second year at Bantam would have been my first full year. My first year at Bantam would have been. I dabbled in it a little bit and then had an injury, so they moved me receiver. And but I first started playing full-time quarterback in grade 9.
And what made you make the switch full-time?
My mom threw javelin in university and high school, and my dad ran track in university and high school as well. So I kind of my mom always taught me how to throw, so I figured I might as well give it a try, and I had the genetics for it, and we needed a quarterback that year on my Falcons team, so I was the next man up.
So that whole old saying that really doesn't stand up is you throw like a girl. Well, maybe you do throw like a girl, and it's pretty good.
Oh, yeah. I owe it all to my mom. She taught me how to throw. She never misses a game. She's traveled to Texas, to Nova Scotia, Manitoba, like Alberta, all over to watch me play, and she's always been there to support me 100%.
Give us the scouting report on Matt Wilson. We've never watched you play. I've watched you play, but people listening to this podcast have never watched you play. Give us the Coles Notes scouting report on Matt Wilson. How would you describe yourself?
6 foot, 178 pounds, run a sub 540, pretty strong kid, I like to think. I got a pretty decent arm. Like to think I have good IQ, good pocket presence. Willingness to make plays with my legs, dual threat quarterback, good leader on the field, and I try to lead by example.
Yeah, you're a really good speaker. I could tell that. That's one of the things I'm admiring about you already. So what's your strength? If you had to pick one thing to hang your hat on, so you got to beat St. Joe and Matt Wilson has to get it done. What's the attribute you're going to hang your hat on in this game?
I'd say my ability to extend plays on my legs. When the pocket breaks down, ability to evade tackles and make a play downfield and give my receivers time to get open.
Okay, Matt Wilson joining us here. Before we get to the U18, you were on that team for a couple of years in a row. What do you hope to do after you graduate here? Like, where do you hope to extend your career? You talk about extending plays. How about extending your career?
That's kind of up in the air at this point. I've got a couple options right now. Just trying to really take my time with it. I'm not too worried about that right now. I'm just worried about winning the next game here against St. Joe's.
For sure. What do you want to take in school at the next level? That's important, too.
Oh, yeah, 100%. That's the most important part about this is football paying for my education.
And so what do you want to do?
Definitely want to go into either law or become a physio. So work my way into either of those.
Well, you sound like you definitely have the IQ and the speaking ability to be a lawyer, no doubt about that. Okay, so when we're talking about the U18 team, you were obviously on that squad. Just your thoughts on the last 2 years. Has the team played well, just came up just short?
Oh, it was, if nothing else, it's a fantastic learning experience for everybody who went. We had that upset in the gold medal game. I think we had the game in the bag, and we just had a little breakdown on defense later on, but you can't put it on that one play. You know, it's throughout the whole length of the game, there was plays we didn't get and plays they made, so it just ended up coming down that we didn't get away with the gold medal, but like, it's a great experience. You get to travel with the team. You get to meet guys from all over the province who play the same game you love, and great coaching you get, and it's a really, really great developmental tool to set you up well for your high school season coming up.
Matt Wilson joining us here. So you've got St. Joe's on the docket this week. So what's the game plan going into that one? How do you beat these guys?
St. Joe's, you know what? We're not going to tell you too much because you never know who's listening. But our coach is going to game plan well, and we feel confident going up against them. We got a good balanced running attack, balanced passing attack. We're feeling good going into our game against St. Joe's, but they're going to be a formidable opponent, as they always are.
Okay, you lawyer. I'll attack it from another angle, okay? What's the strength of your team?
I think it's our running attack right now. We got Tanner Sakash is, I believe, leading the league in rushing, and Terrell is second. If you have to put him in, it's not a step down by any means. We got two great running backs here at Holy Cross.
We know the rivalry between Regina and Saskatoon. The Leboldus Golden Suns have dominated for the last, 4 years now. So I'm thinking that Saskatoon, a team from Saskatoon, maybe Holy Cross wants to take that championship finally.
Yeah, we're hoping to. You know, we're not going to worry too much about that this week, but hopefully we end up making it there. And from what I understand, the Regina League seems to be a little bit up in the air with Miller beating Leboldus, I think, and Campbell in the Leboldus tie, and Campbell and there's a couple teams in there in the running, but we're not going to worry too much about that. We got our own league to get out of here. So,
Matt, thanks for this. Best of luck, and we'll be following you.
Thank you very much. You have a great rest of your day.
All right, time now to speak with the head coach of the Riffle Royals football team here in Regina. That'd be Derek Pilon. Derek, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing good, man. Okay, so let's talk about Derek Pilon. The Riffle Royals. If the Riffle Royals runs through anybody's blood, it's Derek Pilon. Tell me about your football life as it relates to Riffle.
Yeah, sure. Well, I actually played at Riffle before I started coaching here back in, when was that, 2005. My dad actually coached at Riffle as well, and my older brother played at Riffle before me too. So Riffle football has been around our family for quite some time now.
And you've been head coach for how long now, Derek?
This is going my fourth year.
Okay, cool. So, Derek, what does it mean to you to be a Riffle Royal?
I guess it just means it's kind of like the lifestyle. When John Bolin was the head coach here, he kind of implemented the hard work ethic, and that's kind of what was instilled from John to me, and that's what I'm trying to kind of instill in our players here at Riffle. Just, you know what, you don't always have to be the most skilled guy, but if you work hard, you always get better things or better outcomes in the end.
Since the mid-2000s, Derek, how has football changed, in your opinion, in terms of maybe interest, in terms of the size of the athletes and that type of stuff?
I think the biggest thing for football that's changed is it's becoming more of a year-round sport instead of just a fall sport. Back when we played, it was football in the fall, and then it was hockey or basketball in the winter, and then in the springtime, it'd be baseball, soccer, golf, whatever the case may be. But now we have athletes coming that are playing. They'll play spring league. They'll play U17, U16, and then they might go play football, South Select U17 during the wintertime as well. So I've noticed that's probably one of the biggest differences is that these guys are now more so one sport athletes instead of doing multi sports.
Mm-hmm.
And also, obviously, the rules of the game kind of changed a little bit now, where safety is a little bit more concerned. And offensively, it's becoming more of a passing league than it has been back when I played. It usually was more so run first, pass second. But now you see these guys and these athletes, these quarterbacks, being able to throw the ball around the field. So that's probably the biggest adjustment or biggest change I've noticed.
This is the Growing the Game podcast. Derek Pilon, head coach of the Riffle Royals, joining us here for a couple more minutes. When John Bolin coached, this team was a powerhouse, and they've been really respectable under you. But to get them over the top, you have to get by the LeBoldus Golden Suns. This year, it looks like that is doable. It's a wide-open league.
Yeah, the league is a lot more balanced this year than it has been the past five, I guess, with LeBoldus kind of taking control of the league. LeBoldus is still a powerhouse. They have some great players over there, but Campbell's really strong, and also Miller. Like the four teams have been pretty tight in certain types of games, but we're looking forward to playing Campbell this week, and it should hopefully be a good game.
Yeah, it should be. Based on the regular season matchups, you lose 28-27 when they kick it through the end zone on the last play, and then you guys look dead to rights, down 9-0 with about 4 minutes to go, and then something happened and you guys come up with a 10-9 victory. So based on that, this should be a pretty tight game.
Yeah, it's kind of a different story. Both games that we played against them, we were in the lead to start the first game. They came back, and then vice versa, they were in the lead most of the game, and then we had the last minute drive. So I guess it really, it's which team's going to make the fewer mistakes, and it might come down to a couple plays here or there that'll determine the game kind of thing. So, no, it should be a good one. We're excited about it, and our boys are excited about playoffs, and I'm sure Campbell is too, and we're looking forward to it as coaches.
Derek, just before I wrap up talking about you, I want you to talk about some of your athletes, maybe even some of your graduating athletes, because this is kind of to highlight the coaches and the players. That's why I kind of started this podcast. Maybe give me some of the names.
Sure.
Give me some of the names on your roster that we can watch for in this game, and you know, some of those graduating guys.
Okay, well, our team's pretty young this year compared to last, but we have some great 12 players. First guy that I can think of is Tyler Lawn, number 16. He plays slot back for us. He's been a three-year player for us, and he's committed to the Rams. So he's been having a great year. Another great 12 on the defensive side of the ball. We have Josh Giordat. We have Austin Chase, Drake Schneider, and Colby Rainbill. All four guys playing linebacker for us, all returning guys. And our linebacking crew has been pretty great for us this year. There's more great 12s. Like our whole defensive DBs have been pretty good for us this year. A. McMahon up in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess some of the younger guys. Well, Zach Arsenal was the top rusher this year. He's had a pretty fantastic year. I'm sure a guy you know a little bit, Ethan Ball. He's been our top receiver, and for such a young guy, he's made some great plays for us too. So there's a lot of guys on our team that have stepped up when we've asked for it, and that's what we're hoping to build off of for this game tomorrow.
And you've got the big mountain of the man, Solomon Drager, who's on the offensive line, a guy that did commit to the U of S Huskies too. Is that a big deal for you, Derek, to see that these guys have a chance to develop and go to that next level, not only first and foremost to continue their education, but to carry the Riffle colors to the next level?
Yeah, it's an awesome thing to see guys move on and being able to, you know, keep playing football and also, like you said, I guess, focus on different types of aspects of education and try to find a career that they're passionate about. Yeah, like you said, Solomon Drager, he committed to the Huskies, Alon committed to the Rams. We have a couple other guys that have the possibility of playing secondary ball. It's been great this year to see guys like Kyle Borsa, Jeff Goff, Mason Nias got to play last week a little bit. Julian Lynch, who's in the CFL right now. So these guys that I've had the opportunity to coach and see him play in the secondary level, it's pretty cool to see, and it makes it enjoyable watching the games for sure.
Okay, Derek, last question for you. Why do you like to coach? I mean, you're a teacher, so you do it as an extracurricular thing, but you're not getting paid, and you put in hours and hours of work. What kind of satisfaction do you get out of coaching?
I think the biggest thing is just seeing these the boys grow into solid members of society, and you can see them starting from the beginning of the fall. And then just progress, and the biggest, the most satisfying thing as coaching is, you know, when you teach the boys certain skills or certain plays, and they actually perform it and they make the play, and it's just satisfying to see. Hey, they're starting to make plays, and obviously I'm having fun and joking around and becoming tighter as a team is just. It's something that, as a coach, is just awesome to see. That's why I enjoy coaching.
Derek, good luck against Campbell. We wish you well.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, it's time now to talk about what is known as the libel lateral after last weekend. It was the Mustangs versus the Riders in a semifinal game, and the Riders are down and they're scrambling and they got to pull a play out of their playbook, and they pull out the old hook and ladder. If you don't know what a hook and ladder is, you got to Google the 1981 playoff game between the Dolphins and the San Diego Chargers, and the Dolphins scored on the play. Well, the Riders did the same thing, and here to talk about it, Hunter Canik-Liepert. How are you, Hunter?
Good, how are you?
Good, man. So, okay, walk us through the play. How much time's left on the clock?
There's 30 seconds left.
Okay.
And I'm thinking we have to get a touchdown on this play. It's third down.
Yeah, you got to get it. So it's third down. Do you have any timeouts left?
I don't think so.
You have no timeouts. Okay, so you got to get, can you get a first down before you score a touchdown?
I think we're in goal.
Okay, so here we go. So the play set up. Now, had you played the Mustangs at all this season, and had you beat them? What was your season series like?
Yeah, we played them second game, and we beat them 24-12.
Okay, so Hunter Canik-Liepert is the tailback on the hook and ladder. So they throw the ball. So who's your quarterback?
Vincent Palmarine.
Okay, Vincent Palmarine throws it to the slot back. What's his name?
Sean Craig Penner.
Okay, and so then take us through the play. Walk us through the play, bud.
We get the snap off, and Vincent, he throws it to the slot back. And then the slot back has, like, a little bit of time before he gets tackled to pitch it off to me while I'm running towards him. And then I catch the ball, and I just run.
And what are you thinking when you catch that ball? Do you have an open lane, or do you have to beat anybody to the end zone?
I had a wide open lane, to be honest.
And what's running through your mind as you're running to the end zone?
Have to get this to win.
Yeah, awesome. So now you guys, you win this game, and you're off to who you playing in the championship this coming weekend?
The Bulldogs.
Coached by Gene Mikowski, the former Rider great. Have you played these guys in the playoffs or in the regular season previous to this game?
Yeah, I'm not sure what game it was, but they beat us 28-6. So this could be revenge for us.
So was that score indicative of the game, or are you more closely matched than a 28-6 score would indicate?
Yeah, I think we just had an off day. So.
Okay. So yeah. what do you got to do to beat the Bulldogs?
Work hard. Do all we can. Like every play, we have to work hard.
So what do you like best about football, Hunter?
Just meeting everyone and playing together.
Yeah,
getting touchdowns is an amazing feeling.
You love getting touchdowns. Do you like catching touchdowns, or do you like running through the line and busting it yourself?
I like running because I kind of like have to work hard to do it.
Yeah. So on that, let's go back to that hook and ladder play. Your slot back that caught the ball, did he have to hold it and wait for the guys to come to him before he pitched it to you? Like he must have had to play a pretty good decoy there.
He caught it, and he held it for, like, about 2 seconds, and I just came towards him.
Did you guys did you guys practice it much with Coach Harrison?
Yeah.
Yeah? And you said, if we ever need this, we're pulling this out at the end.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, now, what other sports do you play besides football?
Hockey and school volleyball.
School volleyball. I know you're getting ready for a tournament as we talk here, so I'll just quickly wrap this up. Now, your brother is, of course, a defenseman for the Vancouver Giants, played with the Pat Canadiens. In fact, my son played with your brother Alex in minor hockey. So are you going to have to make a choice here between football and hockey soon?
Yeah, this year or next year, I mean.
Yeah, so are you kind of leaning towards hockey?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you want to go out a winner here this weekend then, obviously. What number do you wear?
30.
Okay, so we'll watch for number 30 out there on the field this weekend. Libel Field. It is going to be the Riders up against the Bulldogs. Good luck, my friend.
Thank you.
Time now to speak with former Rider Chris Best, who, of course, is on our 620 CKRM Rough Rider Radio Network, is one of our outstanding panelists. Chris, your old buddy, Darian Durant, comes back to the scene of the crime. Well, not technically, because he hasn't played in the stadium yet. What kind of emotions do you think are running through doubles as he rolls in here?
Oh, I mean, it's going to be a big game for him, for sure. I mean, he's had this one circled all year long, even before Montreal season kind of went south on them here. It was very important. We all kind of really wanted to play in the stadium, and unfortunately not all of us got to play in the stadium. This is something we've talked about for years now, so it's a big game for Darian.
Yeah, I never really talked to you about that. How tough is it for you to have never played in a stadium?
I'll actually tell you a funny story. Me and Darian had an agreement that we would both play in the stadium together. We'd play 1 year together in the stadium, and we both screwed it up. So that's just how it goes, I guess.
Well, I'm happy that you can look back with a laugh on it. I know it's got to be tough somewhere down deep after everything you put into the old stadium. And we'll talk about that in a second too, Bestie. But what kind of game do you think we're going to see from Darian Durant? It's been an awful season. And more specifically, how do you feel about the way Darian has played? How much does it hurt you to see him playing like this?
It sucks for sure. I mean, that's my guy, as we've maintained all year long. And he definitely, like, it hasn't been all him. Like, Montreal has problems all over the place. But to say he's had a good season is definitely not true. He's not been playing that well. And so it hurts to see him play like that. You know, you always want to kind of end on a high note. You never want, especially as you get older, you know, if you start playing poorly, they just start looking for replacing you. Not in terms of, they don't cut your contract. They don't, like, renegotiate. They just get rid of you. So, no, I don't like seeing that from Darian at all. And hopefully a chance to go on a high note here. At the same time, the way the two teams are trending, Montreal trending down, and the Rough Riders getting hungry for a playoff match here, I don't know if it's going to be as much a game as we hope it would be.
Do you think Darian will treat this, though, like it's his Grey Cup this year?
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely his Grey Cup, you know, but I don't know if everyone else is going to treat it that way. And as much as everything is blamed on a quarterback, rightly or wrongly, you know, it's a team game. If his O-line doesn't decide to block, if his receivers just don't really try on their routes, you know, it doesn't matter how much Darian can do about it. Like, it just won't work out that well. I hope that's not the case, but, I mean, some guys, you know, out of the playoffs, like, they're just basically looking to go home at this point.
So, Darian Durant, take off your glasses, your teammate glasses, your friend glasses, and just look at him. Do you think he still has some gas left in the tank, even in a backup role, and right now it's just a confidence thing?
I think, yeah, I do think he still has some left. I mean, he's one of, like us as well, but he's one of a few quarterbacks that beat Calgary this year. Like that's he's on that short list. You know, when things are going better at the start of the year in Calgary, I really don't think this whole situation in Montreal can be blamed solely on Darian. Talking to guys over there, it sounds like it was a complete mess from the top down. So it's unfortunate he got caught in that. And like as I said, he has not been playing as well as he should be playing. But I still think he's got some time left in him.
So do you think he'll land up somewhere in the CFL next year, maybe as a backup in a reduced role in terms of his contract?
Yeah, I mean, Kavis even said they may bring him back. I'm not sure if that's true or not, especially not at the sort of money he's making. That's kind of the problem. You get that big contract, you have to earn it. So, but yeah, I think, you know, everyone, there's a lot of teams in this league that respect Arian, respect his body of work, and, you know, if you can kind of slide into a Kevin Glenn role and do a backup, or who knows, maybe Montreal will bring him back. But I think there's a spot for him somewhere in the CFL next year.
How do you think he'll be received here Friday?
I think he'll be received well, you know. Like, I remember a couple months ago there was some sort of public opinion poll that said Darian Durant was still one of the most popular people in all of Saskatchewan. You know, that was when the SAS party was polling poorly, so he actually was beating the SAS party. I think it was like, you know, like everyone knows the game. It's an important playoff game for us, but, you know, Darian did a lot for this team. So to completely turn your back on that is, you know, that's not fair. So I think if we receive well, but then when the game's on, the game's on.
Yeah, just like everybody else, he'll be booed into submission. Big game for the Rough, big game for the Rough Riders. I have to admit, Bestie, I thought it was a throwaway game at the end of the year. I thought that's where the Riders might get their seventh win because Edmonton would be resting their starters because they'd already have a playoff spot nailed down. As it's turning out right now, the Riders don't look past this game. That last game of the regular season could be a dandy and have big playoff implications.
Oh, yeah, that's super exciting. I know, to have playoff races like this go down to the wire, that's really, really important for sure. And, like, it's going to make for some very entertaining football over these next 2 weeks. Yeah, both us and Edmonton cannot afford to take their foot off the gas pedal at all. And even without that, obviously both teams are in the playoffs. But if you start losing right before the playoffs, it's not really good for the team psyche. You want to be entering the playoffs on an upward note. You don't want to be backing into the playoffs.
Chris, who's the biggest hothead coach you've ever played for? Can you give us the straight goods?
Oh, easy. Chris Sweet.
Chris Sweet.
Are you talking? You talking position coach? You talking?
I'm just in general.
Position coach is absolutely Chris Sweet. That man was insane.
And what was it like playing for a guy like that?
Oh, it was. I mean, I respected what he wanted the best for us. I respected him that way. But like his methods were awful. Anyone who sat behind us on the stadium there, like you just watch him berate us, like break markers, scream at us. Like it was just it wasn't helpful. You know, like we're not in college. You know, we don't need to be screamed at like that. We're just trying to do our jobs. So it was not. It was not a conducive situation to winning, for sure.
The reason I bring that up, talking about the Eskimos, Jason Moss has turned into be a real hothead, from yelling into his microphone to slamming his headset to yelling at his special teams coordinator, Corey McDermott, last week.
Yeah, poor McDermott.
Yeah. So what do you think about that as a head coach losing his mind like that? What would you think if your head coach lost his mind that many times?
I mean, after a while, you just tune it out. You mean, you can only get yelled at so many times before just like, whatever, man. Like, you know, if you're done with me, just cut me. If not, just be quiet, you know? Yeah. And that's what happens with like Chris Sweet. You just start turning them out, you know. Like the good coaches, the coaches have been around for a long time. You hear about them; they're very even keel. They don't lose their mind. Like, let's not say they never lose their mind, but if they very rarely do. So if they actually lose their mind like that, you know it means something. You know, like I could probably count on one hand the amount of times that Ken Miller yelled at us. But you can be guaranteed that every single time he yelled, I paid attention.
Yeah, for
so,
sure.
You know, to be that respected coach like that everyone wants to play for, that's definitely not the way to go about it.
Speaking of respect, what kind of respect do you have for a guy like Nick Lewis? This definitely could be Nick Lewis's. I know we said it for 5 years, but this could be Nick Lewis's last game on Friday because he's not scheduled to play in the final game of the regular season against Hamilton. So we could be seeing the end of a storied football career. What kind of respect do you have for Nick Lewis as a player?
Oh, yeah, lots of respect. I mean, I've known Nick over the years because he lives in Regina here. And like, so he's a decent guy and everything. Like, but like, the fact that he's produced at such a high level for so many years after putting on so many pounds, like, it's just, it's amazing. Like, he always gets his catches. He always does it. And he has such a feel for the game at this point. Like, he's not a first receiver, even a second receiver, but in that third receiver role, he can still get you a couple key catches, a couple key first downs to this day and age. And like, the fact that he beat G-Roy's records, and G-Roy, like, he is on a platter. He is one of the best players I've ever played with, and he beat all G-Roy's records. So like, that's just amazing.
Okay, so yeah, and he doesn't really run patterns now. He kind of run walks to a hole and gets open. So it's kind of
but he's got such a good feel. He's always open, you know. You get that first down from him.
That's for sure. Okay, so how do you feel about this team, and more specifically, how do you feel about Daron Carter and his performance? Were you shocked by that last week?
I don't know. I knew he was an athlete. Like, I thought physically he could handle what he did, and that's obviously what he did out there. I just, I was worried more about the communication issues, about more, like, the technique issues. And, like, he didn't seem to be in the wrong place. And it was like, there didn't seem to be those issues at all. So, like, I have respect for the guy. He definitely did. He went out there and looked like a professional cornerback, which is about all you could ask for a guy put in that situation. So, you know, good for Jaron. He definitely, I would once again prefer if he was still playing receiver. I think we could use him at receiver more. But, like, he didn't look out of place as a DB. And, like, that's pretty amazing at this level.
Yeah, no kidding. We said it on the broadcast. The juice is worth the squeeze right now, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's still Jaron. I mean, it's been a little calmer week this week. That's been good. We had a lot of calm last week. A little calmer this week, which I appreciate. But, yeah, that's what you get with Jaron. But he's definitely, when you play like that, like you can afford to kind of have some missteps as well.
How does that play in the locker room? You were in that locker room, not with him, obviously. But how does that play in the locker room when you got a guy kind of like that, outlandish, but has that kind of talent? Because he did play with a kind of guy like that in Dwight Anderson. He wasn't as talented, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I play with lots of guys like that. Dwight is definitely not the only one. But, like, it's just kind of, as I said, because it happens to lots of guys, you just kind of know, like, okay, this guy's crazy. He's just going to kind of be like that. And they're not necessarily bad locker room guys either. You just know, you're going to get some badness from them. You know it's going to be, you're going to have the coach yelling at the whole team when they're really yelling at them. It's just kind of one of those situations you always have to deal with, you know. And, you know, yeah, everyone just kind of understands it. Everyone's played with a guy like that. It's really not as much a distraction in the locker room as it is outside the locker room. That being said, as we've talked about, there is that line where all of a sudden they're still making a distraction and they cannot compete at the level they need to compete to be that much of a distraction. And then everyone kind of knows, like, man, this guy is really costing us now.
I'm going to tell you this right now. This guy right here I'm talking to, I honestly got to say this. I didn't know Chris Best would be as good as he is as an announcer, but he is proving to be just as good of an announcer as he was as an offensive lineman. Thanks for this, Chris. We appreciate it.
Hey, no problem, Baldy. Always a pleasure.
This has been Growing the Game with Baldy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com.